Welcome, everybody, to tonight's program. As Leela mentioned, the second in my series on Shiva process, self-inquiry. And even if you don't formally do Shiva process, there might be some helpful hints in that in your practice. So I always like to begin my program by quoting my guru, Swami Muktananda, pictured here, who used to begin all his programs by saying, in Hindi, Sabko bade sammane ke saath prem se vidik swagat. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And he would say the essence of spirituality is to welcome another person with love. So in that spirit, I want to welcome you all. And I also want to welcome everyone watching around the world on the, what do we call the global satsang on the internet. A lot of people watching tonight from in the United States, in New York, and Swami Bhagavananda in Illinois, and then Abraham and Kashi in Ann Arbor, Chandler Lake in New York, and Gauri and Mark in Canada, and, of course, Ramdas in India. Oh, I'm going to name every person. I'm not going to. Japan and Serbia, of course, hello. And all around Australia, in Adelaide and Brisbane, a huge number of people watching at the Brisbane Center. And also in Byron Bay, a big group there, including our Deepak, and Oya, Tuyaji, Govinda, Prem, Antonia, Julie, and Kyle. And Shamala also watching in Byron Bay, and our beloved Jyoti is watching. She hasn't quite made it here yet, but she's recovering well, so hello. I'll have to say hello to everyone in Adelaide, Pina, Dayadevi, Maruti, and Brisbane, Shivaji, Nitya, Vanessa, Sharada, Kay, Anthea, Dakshina, Kate, Therese, and welcome everybody. Pratibha, Karuna, whatever. Welcome! Shiva process, a method of self-inquiry. This is a quote from the Maitri Upanishad. The Upanishads are wonderful works, the highest works. They're said to be the end of the Vedas, the last part of the Vedas, with the wisdom part of the Vedas. Some of the greatest teachings of the yogic path are from the Upanishads. And this is what this says. Samsara is the disease of the world. The disease of the mundane, of material existence. And the Upanishad says, samsara is just one's thought. With effort, then, he should cleanse it. What is one's thought, that he becomes. This is the eternal mystery. So our experience of the world, we think, is objective. It's actually powerfully conditioned by the way we think about it, the way we understand things. And if we transform our understanding, the world is transformed. And in my years of doing yoga, I found this to be absolutely true. We think it's because of other people, because of circumstances, because of bad luck, because of people's invidious, vicious ways of being, that it's all like this. My father used to say that he had a bad zombie. But the truth is, it's the way we think about things. Another quote from the same Upanishad, by tranquility of thought, one destroys both good and evil karma. The mind is said to be twofold, pure and impure. Impure by union with desire, pure from desire completely free. Two sides of the mind. We can think the mind can be light or dark. negative or positive. The mind thoughts go upwards or they go downwards. He says, the mind in truth is for mankind the means of bondage and release, both bondage and release. Freedom and servitude, both are determined by the mind. If bound to objects, bondage follows. From objects free, that is called release. So the mind is central to everything, every bit of inquiry we do. And behind the mind is what we call, in our tradition, the self. This is the blazing consciousness that exists at our core. I'm going to talk about consciousness a lot tonight. But the mind is kind of the doorkeeper. I always think of those clubs, you know, dance clubs where you have to be very cool to get in, and they got a bouncer at the door, and if you're not cool, they kick you out. And the mind is like the bouncer at the door. If you want to attain the self, the mind determines whether you get in. And if the mind is positive and open and intelligent, it gives you the experience of the self. But if the mind is dark and contracted, it turns you away from it. But if you give them a little bit of graft to the mind, it gets very happy. So you can feed it a few dollars, Devi dollars, mantras, and say a few mantras makes the mind happy. Anyway, last month I began my discussion of Shiva process, and we also did some practical exercises. This is a review for those who weren't there. And by the way, you can look on the podcast and hear the first lecture. And if you can't remember everything I'm about to say, then you can listen to this on the podcast tomorrow. And last week I defined the upward shift and the downward shift during each day. If we're very attentive to what's happening within us, we experience both these, upward shift and downward shift. And you don't really need to know. I mean, it's pretty obvious what an upward shift and a downward shift is. You know, an upward shift is like, ah. A downward shift is like, ah. When your team loses, it's a downward shift. And when your team wins, it's an upward shift. So one aspect of inquiry is to be keenly aware of these shifts during the day and to understand them profoundly. Now, associated with self-inquiry, the big name in the 20th century was Ramana Maharshi, the great sage of Arunachala. And his method was to ask the question, who am I? With the view of connecting and holding the self. In our method, I always joke about it. I say, our question is not who am I, but what's going on here? And I say that's a New York question, like, what's going on here? It involves looking within at our own experience and asking that question, what's going on here? Not what ideas I have about it, but what's actually happening within. And that's where it all begins, actually looking at what is. I also spoke about the true voice of the self, which if we know how to access it, can give us true information about our life. And that place inside of us is also characterized by joy and peace and love. When we hear another voice from within, it can be a deluding voice. For example, when we're angry, the voice we hear is an angry voice and usually doesn't give us good information. When we're jealous, we hear the jealous voice, and that doesn't give us good information, and so on. And when we're sad, we hear the sad voice. And those voices don't give us true information. But when we're in the clear space of good feeling, we're more likely to access the true inner, the voice of the self. And I spoke about the predicament that we're in as conscious beings who are filled with desire and aspiration, living in a material universe that's completely indifferent to our hopes and dreams. That's a real predicament. We want everything good. We want to win the lottery. We want to be very popular. We want to be very rich. We want to blah, 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 right? The universe is indifferent. It's a very sad fact. And no wonder the Buddha concluded that life is suffering. A great discovery. Went out and he did practice for many years and he came, life is suffering. Thanks, Buddha. I could have told you that without doing all that. Anyway. But then he went beyond that and he said, suffering can be overcome. And to do that, we have to be very skillful and on purpose. And one great method is self-inquiry and meditation and spiritual practice. Everybody wants to overcome suffering. Everybody wants to empower themselves. Everybody wants to feel peaceful and fulfilled. No? And we have different strategies for that. And then, sometimes those strategies, we despair of them, and then we turn to drugs and alcohol, which is also a strategy to try to find that. But the great masters of spirituality say there is only one real way to achieve this, and that's through inner means, through inner method, through meditation, through contemplation, through self-inquiry. And that's why we're all here. So, and also, last time I introduced you to the guided meditation, the Shiva process guided meditation, in which we examine tensions in four areas in the body, in the navel, the heart, the emotional center, the throat, communication center, the third eye, the intellectual center. And then I also spoke about my aha experience I had sitting with my guru. I was in a state of striving. I mean, I did striving in my previous life, academic life and so on. Striving is the way you do it. When I came to spirituality, I thought, you strive. I wanted to achieve samadhi, which is like a deep meditation, That was my ambition. I'm going to be self-realized and so on. And I kept getting thrown back. I would try to quiet the mind, and the mind would attack me. And then I had this realization, which said, I can't always have the meditation that I want, the ideal meditation, but I can always have the meditation that I'm having, which was a very great help for my sadhana, for my self-acceptance. And I probably have to give a footnote to the Rolling Stones for that one, too. So Shiva process begins with the meditation you're having. In other words, where you actually are, not where you want to be, where you could be, where the Buddha is, where Ramana Maharshi is, where Baba is. Not there, but where you actually are. And that's not bad. Where you are is pretty good because everything is Shiva. Even if we'd like to attain the highest state, Shiva process understands that the doorway to it is via an investigation of present reality. So it shares something with scientific method. This is what's here. You could say it's science applied to the inner. So, on to this week. I heard that somebody on the internet audience told us that the night after the talk, she had an extraordinary breakthrough. She knew she had some sort of block, and in her sleep, it was revealed to her that she habitually berated herself. And this is a tremendous understanding, that she always berated herself. And this is, it was Gargi's mom, Mariette, so well done. It's a great insight, and I discovered this about myself way back when I was with Baba in Ganeshpuri in the early 70s. I call this phenomenon tearing thoughts. Tearing thoughts happen when our own mind turns against us and tears into our heart, saying things like, I'm a loser, I hate myself, I'm worthless, everybody's better than me, everybody's getting more than me. You know what I'm talking about? Yes, you do. Tearing thoughts. It's like your own mind turns against you. A horrible phenomenon, and yet so common. Everybody has these, and if they're undetected, these tearing thoughts, they can ruin your life. They're the worst phenomenon in our psyches, and they love to work invisibly. So it's very important to become conscious of them and be aware, I'm having tearing thoughts. So this is like making the unconscious conscious. You know, contrary to what Freud or even Jung said, the unconscious is not that mysterious. It's like if you're sitting in a room and there was a closet over there, and you said, that closet is extremely mysterious. God knows what's in it. So for heaven's sakes, open it up and look. Same is true of your unconscious. Look at it. You have to look at it, and it yields itself to you. So if you examine your inner process carefully, you actually make the unconscious conscious. By becoming aware of some of these hidden movements, an advanced yogi is no longer controlled by unconscious factors, mysterious psychic forces. And that's why they call it freedom. Baba's name is Muktananda, the bliss of freedom. He always wanted freedom, spiritual freedom, not political freedom, not social freedom, but spiritual freedom. What that means is freedom from your own tendencies, your own habits, and your own conditioning, where you're free to act from yourself, not automatically because you were programmed that way. The Buddha said, on the unconscious, he said, if the roots remain untouched and firm in the ground, a felled tree still puts forth new shoots. If the underlying habit of raga and dvesha, craving and aversion, is not uprooted, suffering arises anew over and over again. So he's saying that we contain within us certain tendencies. Yes, we'll put it on the fans. Jesse, are you hot? Getting hot? Okay. So we have these tendencies, and they keep rising. And even after you've done a lot of work on yourself, you've meditated for years, certain tendencies will recur. And you shouldn't be depressed about them. What's the answer to when you observe a tendency arising that you don't want? Then you have to work against it. You just throw it away, and you keep doing that as long as they keep arising. Whenever they arise, you have to deal with it and let it go. Now, in Shiva process, we work with both thought and feeling, not thought alone and not feeling alone. And by working with both thought and feeling, which are the two sides of our inner being, if you think about what's inside, they're those two factors, thought and feeling, and they're very, very strongly related. Positive thoughts, positive feeling. Negative thoughts, negative feeling. You can't be depressed and be having great thoughts about yourself. I think I'm fabulous, but I'm feeling very depressed. No, not happening. You're depressed because you're thinking badly of yourself. So one of the texts in Shaivism, Shiva Sutra, says in one of the aphorisms, Bija Vadanam, which means focus on the seed. And the seed is the primal source of everything. Tall oaks from little acorns grow. So the seed of everything, and here the seed referred to is the self, the inner self, or universal consciousness, the ultimate source. Focus on source. What is the source of who you are? And in Australia, they mistook source for sauce. And so they thought the teachers were saying, take refuge in sauce. But it was actually in source. Does it say it the same way here? How do you say it?
Source and sauce.
Source and sauce. No, that's not the same. What am I saying now? What am I saying now? Source. Source is what? Sauce. Now it's like sauce. Oh, yeah, it's a difference. It's a difference.
With an Australian accent, it's pronounced exactly the same.
What?
With an Australian accent, it's exactly the same.
With an Australian, it's the same? Really? You know, in the Midwest in America, they say Mary, Mary, Mary. While in the East Coast, we say Mary, the girl, Mary, be frivolous, and marry, which is, you know, to enter bondage. Just kidding, please. You can't be too careful these days. Sorry. Anyway, where am I? What? I missed the nest.
Some people like to be in bondage.
Yeah. We're all. But anyway, so. So if we investigate, all right. So if we investigate, I heard it. We should have this faith when we do our investigations, that the self source is always behind everything, is at the center of any investigation. All roads lead there. And if we properly do investigation, we reach the self. So we can always have that faith that our true nature is there behind. As I said... What's he saying? That's okay, Uma. Okay, so I mentioned last time there are three forms of Shiva process self-inquiry. One is personal. That is, when you process yourself, you sit down and you work it out yourself. Another is with a facilitator, where they help you process the feeling and get down to source. Master Charles always says source. And then the final is group. Group is anyway, never mind. The truth is that if you were to do track one and track two every day on the podcast? Yeah. The Shiva process self-inquiry track and the Shiva process healing track, you'd be well on your way to understanding Shiva process. It will automatically teach you just doing that. It's about 20 minutes a day, and it'll make you much more aware and it'll benefit you even if you don't do Shiva process, and these are available for free download. So please do that. Have you been good this week and done some of that? Just give me a little subtle shake. Good. Very good people. All right. Let's talk about consciousness. I call this a celebration of consciousness. And when I talk about it, I'm not talking about an exalted yogic state or something far away. I'm talking about your consciousness your awareness as you are and as it is now. So I'm talking about you and me and all conscious beings. It's remarkable to be a conscious being. It's a wonderful, extraordinary thing. Kashmir Shaivism says that consciousness manifests in two ways, as grace, which means as oneness, as harmony, as fulfillment, and also its opposite, which is concealment, Shaivism calls it. The lack of grace, ignorance, separation, frustration. And most of the statements I'm going to show you will show both sides of this equation. So I'm speaking about the powers of the inner world or of consciousness. Our inner worlds are always conscious. So consciousness has, let's look at number one. Okay, here's a celebration. Okay, can you all read that?
Yep.
The capacity to question. See, where's Sri Rock? Here's the Sri Rock. Let me have the Sri Rock. This is Sri Rock. He's orange and he's been striped and he's sat on our puja for years now. And our experiment is to see if it begins and becomes conscious. And he is growing in consciousness, but he communicates telepathically. He hasn't spoken yet. Here I am. No. So, who has the capacity to question, to analyze, and to understand? Which rock? So, these things are the property of the inner world and not the outer world. They're powers of the inner world to question, analyze, and understand. Next, the capacity to be aware and also to not be aware are powers of the inner world, of consciousness. Next, the capacity to enjoy and also to suffer are powers of the inner world. A lot of times we give up being able to enjoy if we could stop suffering, but we have both of those capacities because we're conscious beings. Next, the capacity to be heroic and also to be afraid are powers of the inner world. The capacity to remember and also to forget are powers of the inner world. And also the capacity to love and also to hate are powers of consciousness or the inner world. Interesting, no? Okay, more. Next slide. The capacity to feel satisfied and also to feel discontented are powers of the inner world. The capacity to be gratified and also to be offended are powers of the inner world. The capacity to affirm and also to deny are the powers of the inner world. In Gurdjieff's dancing, they have one dance where they call it holy affirming and holy denying. And they go around saying, holy affirming, and holy denying. Holy. So in the sense that both are movements of consciousness, you can't just have affirmations, because the world doesn't work that way. Sometimes you have to deny. You have to say, no, not this. And so both of these are powers of consciousness. The capacity next to feel connected and also to feel isolated are powers of the inner world. Sometimes we feel connected to everyone, and sometimes we feel estranged from everyone. Both of these are aspects of consciousness. And the capacity to have faith and also have doubt are powers of the inner world. The yogis talk about doubt as a main obstacle in our spiritual life, to doubt. And I never could figure that out, but I associated finally with tearing thoughts. We doubt ourselves. We are the self. We have so many great capacities within, but we doubt them. And because of that, we hate ourselves, we turn against ourselves, and we diminish ourselves. And finally, the capacity to forgive, to bless, and to feel blessed are powers of the inner world, as well the opposite of those. And also, I don't have up there, but the ability to plan. Sri Rak doesn't plan. Sri Rak doesn't dream. Well, he does dream. Calculate, to imagine, to create, to be paranoid, to speak. See, these are not properties of him. And to think, to speak and to think, are all powers of consciousness or the inner world. So it seems to me that this is my this is one of my pet harangues about consciousness, and it seems to me that the right response that you should make to this is, wow, the inner world is utterly crucial for the quality of my life. Yeah. You want to say that? Come on. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Like totally? Really? So, consciousness, so extraordinary. And to stabilize our own awareness, the thought and feeling within, is no mean task, no small thing. And yogis spend their whole life trying to stabilize in the clear space of good feeling, and it's well worth it, and it's doable, and we can transform ourselves from miserable people to happy people, because happiness is the capacity that we have, in potentially. Now, at the source of all these feelings in inner states is the mystery of language. Shaivism says that language shapes our reality. Jnana Dishtanam Matrika is the sutra from Shiva Sutras. Matrika, or means the letters of the alphabet, meaningful sounds, is the basis of all knowing and of all emotions too. Matrika is the matrix, the mother, mater, the mother. Matrika, the ka means ununderstood. So it's the ununderstood mothers. The ununderstood mother of our experience are these subtle thoughts that we have within us. Language in a subtle form. We're in a whole matrix of language everywhere in our heads and everywhere in our culture. And this is what our life is lived in. And these unknown thoughts condition our whole life. And language and feeling are very closely related. I always say, like love and marriage, like the horse and carriage, you know. I was saying that before, you know. When I in my Learn to Meditate course, I always say, if I'm going around like this, I'm not thinking, boy, I'm a loser. And if I'm going around like this, I'm not thinking, boy, I'm terrific. Because thought and feeling go together. There's always self-talk or matrika under any feeling. Whatever feeling you're having, anger, depression, there's always some kind of self-talk under it. If you're depressed, there's these matrikas, tearing thoughts are there. And as I said, these tearing thoughts tear into your own heart. They dry up your life. They destroy your life. They destroy your energy. it's good to know them. The people you hate usually are speaking your own tearing thoughts, because if you didn't have them, whatever they said to you wouldn't bother you. So it turns out that working with feeling directly is very difficult. Like if somebody says to you, cheer up, it doesn't have much effect. But by working with thought, we can change feeling. So pretty much beginning to the end. I want to look at just the different kinds of thoughts we use in Shiva process. So let's look at some types of statements, okay? Okay, the first one, tearing thoughts and inflating thoughts. These are lousy thoughts. Why do I say inflating thoughts? Because these are unrealistic. When you think about yourself in an unrealistically positive way, that's bound to be deflated. That's why it'll give way to tearing thoughts. To have self-esteem is good, but based on something delusional, it's not good. So these are unskilled thoughts. They're the problem. Then we have the next level of thoughts, neutral thoughts. I will go to the 7-Eleven, you know, or things you say to somebody you just meet in the street or something like that. These are neutral thoughts. And now we come to the major statements in Shiva process. And I'll go into each one first. The first one is A statements, which are clear statements of present feeling, which I'll get to. Then there are B statements, possibly uplifting statements. And then there are G statements, which are B statements that come from a higher source, from scripture, scriptural statements. And let's leave it at that for now. Okay, so let's go into A statements. A statements locate where you are. They're very good. When you're happy, say you're happy. When you're sad, say you're sad. That's the way to be free. What am I now? I'm mad, sad, bad, glad, or scared. Which are you now? And make the A statement simply describes what's so. So it's a worship of what's present, very Zen. So I feel, so look inside and say to yourself, I feel whatever it is. I feel sad, I feel happy, I feel interested, I feel bored, whatever it is. The A statement locates you, while what you think is going on doesn't. It's very important to make the statement of present feeling. I have a poem I like by William Carlos Williams, the American poet. Some of you might know him. But here's what he says. He says, I've had my dreams like others, and it has come to nothing, so that I remain now carelessly with feet planted on the ground and look up at the sky, feeling my clothes about me. So he's had dreams, he's had thoughts, he's had aspirations, he's given them up, and he's just present, he's making an A statement to what his feeling is now. I'm looking up at the sky and feeling my clothes. I'm feeling my clothes about me, the weight of my body in my shoes, the rim of my hat, air passing in and out at my nose. That's the Buddhist practice, isn't it? The air passing in and out the nose. And decide to dream no more. So he's made a Zen decision. He's decided to be perfectly Zen. All his dreams have been broken, so he's just going to be present. Sounds depressed to me, actually. Yeah. Need some Shiva process. But there is a certain integrity in being where you are, saying where you are, and just being there. I have a great faith in the A statement. Then we move to the B statement. And these are possibly uplifting because nothing works for everyone all the time. A statement like, they're there, you're okay. Mommy loves you. So these are very good statements. It's okay, it happens to everybody. It's good, you know, encouraging statements. Where's it home on the range where never is heard a discouraging word? What a wonderful place to be there on the range. Never is heard a discouraging word, and the clouds on that What is it? The skies are not cloudy all day.
That's right.
Do you know this one?
Yes.
Okay, so that's B statements. And now among B statements, there's also G statements. And these are very powerful. Non-spiritual people don't have G statements because they don't recognize a higher source. There's a fantastic song Steve Martin wrote. I could have played it tonight, but maybe one, maybe next time, which is Atheists Ain't Got No Songs.
Oh, yeah.
It's really hilarious because atheists live in a truncated universe. We're just going to be material. We don't recognize anything higher. And therefore, if you live in that truncated universe, you don't have tools with which to deal with old age, disease, and death. That's why the Buddha went looking. He went off in search of a G statement. And first he made the A statement. There's old age, disease, and death. That's an A statement. There's old age, disease, and death. Pretty accurate analysis of the human condition, except that there is more. There's more beyond that. And that's why spirituality is so powerful, because the mind rebels at just giving in to this negative view of life. We know that there's something greater. The Buddha was rich and handsome, powerful, had a beautiful wife and child, had successful, was going to be the king, but he knew that he didn't have a G statement. So he went off and he meditated under the Bodhi tree, and he found it, which is suffering can be overcome, and how to do it. So here's a possible overview. It could be said the Shiva process takes us from the bad use of language, unskillful use of language, mechanical use of language, to the good use of language, to the better use of language, to the best use of language, and finally to beyond language. This is just making everything about language. By language, I mean what we say to others and what we say in here, which is probably the most important thing. So bad use of language, tearing thoughts, inflating thoughts. Good use of language, A statements, to say, be aware of present feeling. Better use is B statements, which is uplifting. But first you should make your A statement, because you don't fill a tooth until you clean it out. First you have to drill it out, and then you can fill it. You can't just paste it over. And finally, the best use is a G statement. All of Vedanta, Advaita Vedanta, is based on the G statement, you are that, tattvamasi, or I am Brahman, aham brahmasmi. These are what Shankaracharya said were great statements, mahavakyas, great utterances. And he found them in the Upanishads, which tell us about our divine nature. They say that every one of us has divinity at our center. Wonderful. You know, wonderful character in one of Hemingway's novels says, pity to think so. I think it's absolutely true that we have divinity as our own nature. A G statement is a hyperlink, which allows you to connect with the higher power, with the divine. You know how you press a button on the computer and it brings in other things? Well, if you make the right statement, a mantra is like that too. It's a hyperlink. It connects to another level of energy, shakti. Another way of taking an overview of this, which I really like, is it could be said that each of us holds two narratives within us. One is the surface narrative, the story, our personal, mundane narrative. Which is often frustrated and full of stress, and the story of our life. He did this, he did that. She did this, she did that. She did this, she did that. She did that, got this job, lost that job, got the boyfriend, got the girlfriend, got the thing, blah, blah, blah. So all that. And there's a second narrative, which is deeper still and hidden, and it's a divine narrative. It, in Kashmir Shaivism terms, it's I am Shiva, is that narrative. Now, this narrative exists within us in an unspoken and invisible form until it awakens. And it awakens mysteriously through contacting the guru, through getting in touch with the path. Somehow this awakening takes place, and we start to hear this narrative within us. It starts to speak within us. I am Shiva, I am the self. This is within, and it gets clearer and clearer. So that's the spiritual process. These are a couple of models of what it is. But it's all about the way we talk to ourselves, fundamentally. And we can work with that and transform that. And each of us has a given, which is our own awareness. And for some reasons we can't understand, there's a burden each of us has, a particular kind of burden that we're born with, whether it's from early trauma or from past lives, doesn't matter. We have this thing, but we can work with it. We can overcome the negative aspects of it, and we can find that divine narrative within ourselves. And this is why we do meditation. This is why we do self-inquiry. So in my next talk, May 26th, I'm going to talk about how consciousness becomes blocked. And we'll begin to talk about how to unblock consciousness. And that's immediate relevance to every one of us, whether we accept it or not, or whether we believe it or not, is to unblock consciousness, open the door of joy that we have within us. So let's meditate. And we'll do I'll lead then guided Shiva process, guided meditation of a short form. So let's do that right now. Let's see how long we'll do. I'm not sure yet. Okay, so we're going to close our eyes. We're going to look at four centers within the body. That's the navel, the heart, the throat, and the third eye. And we're going to be aware of them. And then we'll try to expand them. So bring your attention to the navel area. Feel the feeling in the navel area. Does it feel tense or relaxed? Does it feel pleasant or unpleasant? See if you can make an A statement in your navel. I feel tense, I feel angry, I feel relaxed, I feel happy. See if you can do that. And now see if you can make a B statement there, which means I let go the tension. I open up, I relax. Now let's bring our attention up to the heart center, center of the chest, the emotional center. Feel the feeling in the heart center. Does that feel pleasant or unpleasant? Do you feel sad or happy or some other feeling? See if you can make an A statement. I feel sad, I feel happy. Now bring in a B statement. I love. The heart is at its best when it loves, so I give my love. Think of someone or something that you love and say, I love. Now let's bring our attention up to the throat. Feel the feeling in the throat area. Does the throat feel blocked or open? This is the communication center. Sometimes when we have to speak in public, we feel a big block there, because fear comes in. Other times we're flowing, our speech is flowing, and we feel very uplifted. So make an A statement. I feel blocked or open in the throat. And then you can make a B statement. I speak words of truth and of love. And now we go up to the third eye, the center of the brow, the intellectual center. Does the third eye feel tense or relaxed? Does it feel light or dark? Be aware of the feeling in the third eye. And now bring in a B statement. I understand. I have insight. I have clarity. Now we'll meditate for 7 minutes, and you can go to whichever of those centers has the most flow, and just let your meditation flow in that place. Now we'll meditate for 7 minutes. And once again, with great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. Sadhguru Nath Maharaj Ki Jai. Let's meditate.